The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off The Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
All right, the entire flat racing summer has been building to this weekend. You're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing here on Off The Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. You can follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing, and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. And this weekend, every racing moment is going to be important. It is the Longines Champions Weekend, Saturday racing at Leopardstown, Sunday racing at the Curra, and absolutely brilliant cards on both days. I'm delighted to say Shane Foley is our guest this week. Shane, how are you getting on? Oh, he's just frozen there. There you go. Johnny is with us though. Johnny, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Ger? What's the crack?
Yeah, good. We had Michael Verney on working as the hype man for the Champion Stakes last night. He's got everybody's appetite suitably wet for it. Have a look.
The Champion Stakes on Saturday, 2:45 at the Curra. We're talking about one of the best flat races ever to take place on Irish soil.
Yeah, I don't think that's an exaggeration either, Nathan, to be honest with you. There's only four runners, but particularly three of them. Like, it's really, really top-class stuff. It's going to be a three-way dance between St. Mark's Basilica, Tarnawa, and Poetic Flair. And it's just the fact that there's no dead wood or anything in the race. It's just really top-class stuff. Joseph Ryan has another runner in Patrick Sarsfield, which you'd imagine wouldn't be in the frame. There's not going to be any pacemakers. There's not going to be any messing. It's just going to be, you know, the best horse is going to win. Leopardstown, such a fair track as well. A real galloping track, and it's a race. You know, often we build these races up weeks in advance, and something happens, or a horse has a niggle here, or is it a different engagement somewhere else. These three had kind of been earmarked for this race from a long way out. Although Poetic Flair had an entry in France last weekend, and the three of them are going to turn up now, and it's just so intriguing. St. Mark's Basilica is unbeaten this year, 3 from 3 this year. All his runs in France, he's the best three-year-old around, definitely the best three-year-old in Ireland anyway. Trained by Aidan O'Brien, coming up against Tarnawa. Only one run this season, but, you know, her last three runs of last season were, you know, just superb, really. Three big Group 1 wins, a big win at the Breeders' Cup as well. Colin Keane picked up the ride at the Breeders' Cup last year because Christophe Soumian had a bit of COVID chaos, and he's obviously kept the ride. Tarnawa was just brilliant in the Ballyroan last month. I think it was 6.5 lengths at the finish line. She comes here in brilliant form en route to the Arc. And then you have Poetic Flair, you know, who handed Jim Bulger another classic success earlier this year. Just real teak tough horse. Won at Royal Ascot as well. Rarely runs a bad race. So, yeah, like it's a real mouth-watering race. And in fairness, it was originally scheduled to take place in or around 4:30. And they've definitely saw the logic in moving it forward so that everybody's going to get in to enjoy it, and that it won't clash with the football. So it's going to be a race for the ages, it looks like.
Yeah, so that is pretty high praise. Shane Foley, you're back with us. How are you getting on?
Oh, good, lads. How are you?
Yeah, good. Listen, we'll talk to you about yourself in a moment, but I'm interested to get your take on that. The lads are really hyping this up as one of the all-time great flat races. So as a neutral observer, what do you expect to happen? And if you were involved, what would your tactics be on the various horses?
Yeah, it's going to be funny. Look, Colin's filly likes to warm into it, but at the same time, it's probably her minimum trip. Kevin's lad is obviously stepping up in trip for the first time, but likes being ridden forward. I'd say Declan might end up being in front, and St. Mark's Basilica is very straightforward. So I can see Declan and maybe Kevin sitting second, and Ryan and maybe Colin following to have one go. But I just hope it's a proper end-to-end gallop, and we see the best horse who won it. It would take it away a bit if it didn't go an end-to-end gallop till we see the best horse. And it might not happen because it's a big prize and everyone is riding for different connections. There's no same team involved. So everybody's going to ride their horse to their best, their ability.
You see when you're saying there that that's what you expect to happen, it sounds like all of the three jockeys will be pretty happy enough if the race started out that way. So it's the bit that happens next, I suppose, that is the unknown for us.
Yeah, well, look, Colin is going to have to see what's happening. Obviously, he doesn't want him to go too slow, if and his filly does take a while to warm into it. And at the same time, he's not going to want to make a mid-race manoeuvre. But with only the four runners, it'll be interesting. I'd say he'll be happy to follow Ryan. They're not going to want it to go too slow, because that'll only suit Poetic Flair. Kevin's horse probably has more pace than the lads. But no, it's a really, really interesting race. And it's a race that everyone is looking forward to, even as a jockey sitting in the grandstand. It's going to be good to watch.
Yeah, so just for anybody who's unsure, St Mark's Basilica, Ryan Moore is on that for Aidan O'Brien, Colin Keane's on Turnawa for Dermot Weld, and Poetic Flair is Kevin Manning for Jim Bulger. Having listened to that, Johnny, what would your instructions be to the various jockeys in the different scenarios that we've just had outlined to us there?
There's a bit of symmetry, I think, between the All-Ireland final and this race, because, you know, we're probably expecting Mayo, or maybe particularly Tyrone, to pull some tactical rabbit out of the hat that the opposition doesn't know about. And this is a really, really compelling race in this regard, because, you know, I love the Champion Stakes because, as I said, down the years, it pits milers against mile and a half horses, fillies against colts, and older horses against the three-year-olds. And even though there are only four runners here and probably three with a realistic chance, it actually has all of that. You have the miler effect being Poetic Flair, you have the mile and a half horse in Turnawa, you have the older horse in Turnawa, you have the 2 3-year-olds, and you have the males against the fillies. But, you know, it's kind of one of these pros and cons to the Poetic Flair and Turnawa sort of, I suppose, angles into the race. But there doesn't seem to be one about St Mark's Basilica, you know. And when Aidan O'Brien said that he wasn't going to run, he was like the only one in one of these in the race. I said that to Jim Bulger during the week, and he more or less said that's not going to happen. You're very naive. You think Aidan O'Brien's going to have one runner, but that's exactly what it is. And I think it makes it a way more interesting race than if Ballydoyle had a second or third horse, where effectively Ballydoyle / Coolmore can completely dictate the terms of the race. That's not the case here, and the reason is quite simple, in my view. St Mark's Basilica, it doesn't really matter what way this race is ridden. He's the one that'll be fine wherever he is, whereas the other two are potentially vulnerable wherever they are. And Ryan Moore can go out, probably like take it easy, kind of see what's going on, but he's not under major pressure. Whereas I think with Kevin Manning and Colin Keane, they have to be alert to what's going on, because their horses probably do have question marks that he doesn't.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect to this, Shane. The point, I think, was made there by Michael Verney that, you know, Leopardstown's a very fair track. Does that mean the best horse wins? Like, barring some tactical rabbit from the hat, as Johnny says.
Yeah, look, there are four good horses. Patrick Sarsfield is a very talented horse as well. Obviously, I think he's a bit fine to get involved with these. But Leopardstown is a fair track. It's going to be lovely, beautiful, quick ground, I think, as well. And like what Johnny said, St. Mark's Basilica is probably the most straightforward out of them all, in the way he stays, he's relaxed, you can put him where you want. Whereas we know Collins filly takes the time to warm into it. And Kevin, obviously stepping up and Trip, is going to want to try and hold on to his for as long as he can. But I think he will stay. Poetic Flair, I think he's a good, tough, genuine, strong travelling horse. And one of Jim Bulger's, doesn't matter what Trip they are, but once you get upside them, they're hard to get by. But like I said already, it's going to be an intriguing race. But look, there are four world-class jockeys. They'll sort it out as they go along, and they'll be all riding their own horses to their own strength.
It doesn't sound like you're leaning one way or another in terms of a winner.
I actually wouldn't. If you put me there to ride one in the morning, obviously St. Maxwell is the favourite, but I don't think it's as straightforward as that. And I love Collins filly Tarwan. She was very good in America on fast ground as well. Now she got the pace in the race that day, and obviously Mr. Bulger's horse Poetic Flair, he's beat me twice or three times now on Lucky Vega, and the quicker the ground the better. No, they're very good horses. It's a race to really look forward to, for to have three world class horses all run in just in our back garden is brilliant.
Obviously, Shane, you'd love to go on.
If you're reading Anthony into comments or and I'm not talking about getting excuses in early, but like I spoke to both Jim Bulger and Dermot Weld this week, Aidan O'Brien speaking last week. Jim Bulger didn't give me the impression he was that confident that Poetic Flair would stay. And Dermot Weld went out of his way to say that the Ark was her main race this year for Turnawa. So as much as St. Mark's Basilica is the one who's come in having had an injury, Aidan O'Brien isn't really making any excuses, and there aren't any excuses on paper. Whereas for me, Jim Bulger and Dermot Weld, neither of them to me sounded confident talking this week that they'd win.
Okay. And do you read stuff into that, Johnny, or is that like a, you know, pre-race anti-jinx strategy from the lads? Or, I mean, they've both been pretty bullish about their own horses in the past, so maybe just straightforward.
Well, it wouldn't be beyond Dermot Well to say she did what we expected to do if she wins the race as well. You know, but he did go out of his way to say, you know, that the Ark was her race. It's a mile and a half. It's a truly 1 mile and a half. I didn't really get a positive vibe off him. I think that's not necessarily like him. With Jim Bulger, it was more stamina, really. And, you know, if you look at this horse's pedigree, really, he should stay. But I don't know, Shane, like, what if you were trying a horse to stay, would you nearly prefer to be running him in an end-to-end mile and two race than a race that, as much as it could be a sprint, it could be so messy that, like, he just mightn't relax?
Yeah, he's quite straightforward. The only time I've ever seen him lit up was in the English Guineas. Kevin gave him a bit of a route to get a posse, and he just ran with him for a and that was the only other time. That was the only time I've ever seen him light up. He's usually very straightforward. The only thing you have to say about Huerta Fleury, he's been to every single dog fight. I wonder, he seems to be such a tough, genuine horse. But them hard races, he's been championship races all year long. That could be another thing with Huerta Fleury. It could just be, could it be one step too far? He seems to be improving with every run, but them hard races do tend to take their toll at some stage, whereas obviously Tarwana is very, very fresh. No, Mr. Well said she'd improved a lot, but we went an end-to-end gallop in Leopardstown the last day she won, and she looked like she jumped in on the bridle when she went by me at the furlong pole. But it's going to be an intriguing race.
That must be pretty frustrating when you are in an end-to-end gallop and you look over and you're like, hang on a second, there's nothing, literally nothing I can do here.
There was no other way we could have beat Tawana that way, and there was rumours that she was going to need it. She was only 60-70% fit, so we had it in our mind that we're going to make it an out-and-out test. So if she's not ready, we might beat her today, but we won't beat her the next day. But that definitely wasn't the case.
Shane, tell us about the rest of the weekend for you in terms of just how busy you are and what your book of rides is like. On let's start with Saturday in Leopardstown. What have you got?
Yeah, we're busy all weekend. We have Carviglia in the first race, the two-year-old race. She's a filly that's been won in Leopardstown. She's won, was impressive in Roscommon. We've got a lovely draw again in two. She's very straightforward. She likes the track, and she's a filly that I'm looking forward to riding. She could be my best ride for the weekend, but it'd be nice to get it off to a good start. And we have a couple of the handicaps ever present. This lovely big horse, he's running in his second ever handicap, but at the mile and a half, he's in good shape. No Speak Alexander has been a little bit disappointing since her good run in the Guineas. She'd want a little bit of juice in the ground, but she's back working in good shape. It looks a good race. Mother Earth looks the one. Forbearance is an improving little filly that won in York last time. She's in good shape. It's competitive race. Johnny's Murtagh's Earl's good runs. I think he'll be hard to beat if he handles the ground. The reports that he wants slow ground, but he might handle it the once. And we have, what else we have? We've put Pedro in the big 7 furlong handicap. He was very impressive at the Curragh with the first time visor. So no, look, we have live chances. It'd be nice to get one or two over.
Yeah, for sure. That's Saturday at Leopardstown. Sunday, of course, is the Curragh. Are you as busy on Sunday as well?
Yeah, we're busy. We've nearly run on every race, I think, bar the National Stakes and the Flying Five. Discoveries is out again in the Moigler. She's a filly, I think, that she's improved a bit from her debutant run. She's got a little bit stronger. Looks a very, very competitive race. Joseph's filly looks very good. She looks tough, genuine, and very straightforward. And there's two maiden winners coming in, Mr. Wells' filly, and I like George's filly. She was very impressive at the Curragh the last day. She might be a fly in the item to Joseph's one, but our one is definitely improved. And we have some good rides in the handicaps as well on Sunday, but we'll probably have a better book of rides on Saturday than Sunday.
So on a weekend like this, we've been talking all week to anybody who's been involved in the All-Ireland Football Final, but this is, I think it was described as the All-Ireland Final of Flat Racing Weekend, and a piece that we're going to bring you a little bit later on by William McCreary. What's your preparation like? I mean, obviously, you prepare the same for every race, I've no doubt about that, but there is that extra frisson of excitement about the fact that these are some of the best horses in the world, definitely some of the best jockeys in the world. You've got to go toe-to-toe with them, and you've got to be right there. What's your preparation like?
Massive. Look, obviously, we do our homework. We know we're riding against most of the horses that you're running against every day, so you know what's doing. And then, obviously, you have some English challengers coming over the weekend, so you have to do do your study on them as well. But no, look, obviously it's a good week. There's a build up. We had horses on the Curra, our main bunch of Champions Weekend horses all probably galloped at the Curra on Monday, and then whatever they come to the Curra galloped on Tuesday. So that's exciting, having them working and knowing the build up to it, and that they all seem in good shape. Beyond the ball, and we're going into the weekend with the horses in good shape, fresh off a treble in Cork the other day. So that's always important too, and you know your string is in good order.
Is it important for you to work the horses at the track that you're going to be riding at the weekend? Does that happen automatically, or is it kind of less relevant?
No, we just bring them away to the Curra. We don't always, we have Jesse's fantastic gallops at home, but it's just nice to get them away. We bring them away to the Old Vic and just gets their blood up, I suppose, and things like that, and get a blow into them. But I love riding the horses, obviously, before and in their prep, and you just know what's improving, or if one is not quite there that you want to mind it, and if it's not ready to run the weekend, you always do right by the horse at the same time.
And specifically, Shane, when you're talking about the English horses, are you looking to see if there are trends in their behaviour? So if in the middle of the race I'm already ahead of one of these English horses, I know how that horse is going to behave, or that jockey is going to behave on that horse. I know what the capacity of that horse is to come back at me if I go ahead of him, or I know that he's a really fast finisher, so I need to create a bit of distance. What are you looking for when you're doing the homework on the English horses in particular?
Yeah, it's just your homework in general, and what stays and what horse to be ridden, and would it suit you for an end-to-end gallop, or would you rather go slow and try and sprint away from them? If you're riding your own horse to his attributes that he's best at or she's best at. But obviously then, because we're not riding in England every day, you probably wouldn't be in the loop as much. So you have to go through the English, what way they like being ridden, what's their pros and cons, you know. But look, sometimes them better and good races are easier to ride than the lower grade ones.
Yeah. And come here, are you like mad into that? Is that like, give me all this information I can possibly get? Or is it less relevant to you than actually making sure that you've got your own, you know, the controllables thing that we always keep hearing, that actually you're far more interested in making sure that you know exactly how this horse, your horse, is going to respond? Oh, he's frozen again.
Hello, sorry.
Yeah, we're back there. Sorry, I was essentially asking, do you enjoy doing that bit of, are you curious about how the English horses are going more than you would be about actually just making sure that your own confidence is up, because you've done all the work on your own?
No, you wouldn't delve into it that much, you know what I mean? Something you can overthink it as well, you know. At the end of the day, it's only a horse race, and plan B, you could end up on plans C or D after the gates open, you know what I mean? So that's what you have to keep your options open and go with the flow at the same time.
Yeah, just to have the 12 rides, Shane, it's an incredible weekend for you in store. Like, I don't know, there'll only be a handful of jockeys, if even that will have more rides you this weekend. And you must be delighted with the way that you've kind of structured your career, that you've gotten this alliance with Jessica Harrington. And, you know, this is an amazing weekend to have 12 rides in so many Group 1s as well.
Yeah, Master Johnny, look, this is what we want to be at. You want to be competing at the top table, and you're working every morning, looking for that good one, looking for that good two-year-old that might progress into a three-year-old. But I've been very lucky the way things worked out after being Mr. Halford for so long, then went freelancing for a year, slotted in with Johnny nicely there. And then obviously the Jesse job came along. But I've always been involved with Jesse since an apprentice, and I was doing a morning a week there as a freelance. And when that job came along, I was just more than happy to take it with both hands. She's an absolute legend to work with, to do anything with. Massive trainer. And you feel a big part of Jesse's team, and that's what it is down there. It's a big team. We all work together. And I think the results are showing dividends. You know, hopefully we're on the way to our best every year, numbers-wise, this year. So we just need to get a good Group 1 horse along the way. Some of our older ones are after crying wolf, should I say, but no, they've been good to us. The Alpine Stars and whatnot, Lucky Vague obviously headed off, but it's been massive, and Jesse has been massive, and hopefully we can keep growing together.
You obviously, we talked to you, I think it was about 3 years ago at this stage, the last time you were on the show, and that was kind of before you'd got the full-time gig at Jesse Harrington's, but I think you've been there as that transition from Jessica Harrington triumphant jumps operation into an absolute machine on the flat as well. The kind of the rebalancing has happened while you've been there, and you had a front row seat for it, and obviously been quite important in that whole process too. So what's it actually like being part of an organisation that's gone through that transition, that you can see the progress happening day on day? What are the kind of things that underpin that success?
Yeah, look, Jesse has a great team around her with Emma, Kate, Richie, Eamon. There's some very good yard men. And then we have some great owners as well, obviously, that are supplying us with the horses. But they have the faith in Jesse and Jesse's training. But look, the facilities, gallops, barns, everything, as she's progressed, she's brought everything with her. You know what I mean? So, and she's an absolute pleasure to work with. Gets her bollock in here and there, which keeps you in tow. But no, look, she appreciates your opinion as well. And we've some good work riders in there and some good other jockeys as well. And it's very important going forward, you know what I mean? And when they listen to you and take your advice on board, it's good for you as well and your confidence.
What do you get bollocked about?
Getting blocked in on ones and things like that. But Jesse likes to get a clear run, but sometimes it doesn't always work. But no, it just keeps you in tow, you know? She doesn't let you get too big for your boots.
Yeah, we've got Johnny back there.
Hello, indeed.
You're back with us, Johnny.
I am indeed, yeah. The Jessica Harrington lines, I know you're talking about getting locked in a run, but she's just indefatigable, really. She's all these years as a jumps trainer, and now she's, you know, become one of the best dual-purpose trainers in the world. And it's just, I don't know, she must be an amazing person to work for, Shane, because she seems to be hungrier than ever, really.
Johnny, you wouldn't believe the kicks she gets out of a winner, whether it's around Tremore, Belliestown, Longchamp, doesn't matter. A winner is a winner, and she looks after every horse in a way that she tries to win a race with it, whether it's a very good horse or an average horse. But all she wants to do is try and win. And if you tell her you think one mightn't win a race, she'll go out of her way to try and prove you wrong as well. 9 times out of 10 she does. But she's a phenomenal woman. And I think they were doing a thing on her the other day. She's 1,503 winners trained in her career, like, which is unbelievable to think, you know what I mean? So, and that's grade ones over fences, hurdles, group ones on the flat, you name it, you know.
If you hadn't gone to her at that time, where do you think your career would be now, we'll say, and if she didn't go to you, obviously? Would you be kind of flat-out freelance, do you think, which isn't easy, as we know in the journalism game?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I'd struck up a good partnership with Johnny at the time, and obviously Johnny is after growing massively to then. It's hard to know. You don't know. You can't say if, buts, and whens. But look, I wouldn't swap where I am today for loving the money.
In terms of your own, like, apart from the occasional bollocking, how else are you getting better? Like, what's your own plan to make sure that your ambition matches the yard and that you're the perfect person to continue on this?
Oh, I'm massive. And Jesse knows how driven I am and that. But obviously, love to be champion jockey, but at the moment, I think we need Colin Keane to retire the way he's going at the moment. Look, you're always trying to improve. The level of jockeymanship in Ireland is unbelievable, and you're all the time competing at the highest level here. Obviously, you need the horses because there's some very, very good riders in Ireland that are not getting the opportunities and would do an equally as good a job of me, if not all the lads and Colin. But we're just lucky enough we have the jobs, but obviously, we've done something to get there. So it's just about keep improving. And
how do you do that?
That's
the bit I'm really interested in. Like, what when you say you're driven, right, you wouldn't have got to where you are if you weren't driven. I absolutely understand that. But what are you thinking about, like, how do you get the next 2% or 1%?
Yeah, I suppose it's the little things, the attention to detail, I suppose. I could do with tidying up my style a little bit, but I think that I have my own style, but probably could do it getting a little bit neater. But I've tried that, and sometimes I didn't feel comfortable. I looked better, but I didn't think the horses were running for me. So they're little things, you know what I mean? But it's about getting the best out of your horse, and that's what I think. You can easily come in sometimes. The easy thing for a jockey to do is sit in the first two or three and come in and say, it wasn't my fault, I had him in the right place. But you could have had the horse going 3 strides quicker than he was able. But it looks like there's nothing you could do, whereas I think that's where the difference is. You have to try and have confidence in your horse and yourself as well is very important.
That's tricky, isn't it? Because, like, over a period of time, essentially you're second-guessing yourself and trying to make sure that you didn't take a shortcut at any stage. And I'm not just talking about the race, but like your training and even the style thing that you're talking about there. Like, it's clearly the most important thing to drive yourself on. But at some point, you have to give yourself peace as well. And I always find that when you talk to competitive sports people, that there's a tension there between, I need to get better, I need to keep winning, and I need to be ruthless about that. But if you do that all the time, then you kind of become, you know, it's the only thing in your character, and it can, that work-life balance that the normal people have.
I don't think we're normal. I was in Doncaster yesterday, and I was jogging the track, and Doncaster's 2 mile round, and I'd done 2 laps, and I said to myself, right, if I do another 2, I'll ride a couple of winners champions weekend. So I ended up running 8 mile yesterday before I rode, but it was just a pure mental physic. Now, I was ready to stop after 3 laps, but I said to myself, if you don't run another lap, you're not going to ride any winners the weekend. So it's the stupid mentality that keeps you driven and focused. And just that's another thing to me. I love keeping fit and my weight without having to sweat or, you know what I mean? You're not going racing drained or dehydrated. I'm just all the time kind of fit and healthy, and your mind is on the job.
That's really interesting. You know, that's I think they're the things that, as you say, you're not normal. They're the things that separate you and elite sports people from me and Johnny, who would definitely not have done those extra 2 laps. We would have had the Mars bar.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But look, that's just the little things like that that probably be, I shouldn't have said that now. The boys will be slagging me tomorrow. But I suppose it's everyone's different.
Yeah, totally. Go on.
Do you get any slagging about your style, Shane? Because, like, I don't know, it's maybe it's not the most beautiful in the world, but it's definitely unique. I think you're one of the jockeys you can kind of tell comfortably enough in a finish, but that doesn't, was it like Peter Hook had a very strange way of playing bass guitar, but that didn't stop him. I think he used to put his thumb there or whatever, but it didn't stop him. And if you have your unique style, some people play the guitar the wrong way around, and that's how they learned, and that's how they can play. And you have a style, like, do the lads kind of give you slagging over it, or are you long past that stage now?
They're long past that at this stage. Don't fix what's not broken. That it's, if the horses are running and that it's working for me, and it's worked for this long now. So,
100%. And then Shane, for the rest of the year, obviously, Champions Weekend is huge. I know you were in Saudi Arabia, obviously, at the International Jockeys Challenge. Is that another part of actually what happens next in your career? Is that you go off and you see other parts of the racing culture and try and just magpie a few ideas from other racing cultures in some ways?
Yeah, look, it's very different. I've been ridden in Japan for a couple of seasons. I rode in Saudi last year at the Jockey Challenge. Ridden in Dubai, ridden in Germany, been a lot of places. It's a bit harder at the moment now with COVID as regarding doing a winter abroad, because it can be a bit tricky now at the moment. So I'll probably sit put for this winter again and maybe do the likes of a Saudi Jockey Challenge in and out and then go again. Then, look, you're getting a bit older. You have families and things like that, and you're on the go a long time, and you have to give the body a little rest from winter time too, because it's definitely full on for 9 or 10 months of the year, you know.
Yeah, but there's obviously the small matter of this weekend and a few other big races coming after that as well. Before we let you go, is there any other, apart from your own and apart from the Champion Stakes, anything else that you fancy this weekend for people watching?
What else do we fancy this weekend? I think Four Bairns will run well in the 1.5 mile race tomorrow. She's a filly that's improved the way. Looks a good little race. And on Sunday, what do we have on Sunday? I'm trying to think off the top of my head now. You have me caught off the ball. Still standing in the one that it's a very, very competitive handicap, but he's a horse that's been working good. But if I got a winner or two out of the weekend, I'll be happy. KM Pepper, I'd love to see her win. She won that race last year. It looks a good race with Love and Dash and Thunder Knights, but she's an old stable favourite, so I'd like to see her win again.
All right, well, we wish you the very best. Great to have you back on the show.
Best
Shane.
Good luck, Shane.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, boys.
Shane Foley there, giving us his thoughts ahead of a really brilliant weekend of racing at, as obviously, both Leopardstown and the Curragh. The story, I guess, Johnny, of Shane, we haven't talked about him too much on the show since we had him on, as I said, 3 years ago, but that's a career, it's like a perfect mix of situation, opportunity and talent that he has found himself at that moment where that yard is exploding in terms of its potential as well.
Yeah, you know, Colm O'Donoghue was riding the goby for Jessica Hankton, and Colm has more or less retired now, I think. So I suppose these openings came about, and Shane had ridden for Michael Halford for a long time, and Shane has gone on the record to say he felt that he needed a change, and it wasn't necessarily, and I don't think it was, that they weren't getting on. It was just that maybe you feel in your career, in your life sometime, that you are plateauing, and I think people can definitely derive some kind of meaning from that, because a lot of people never really change their jobs. They're very reluctant to change their jobs if they feel that they're doing fine. If they're doing 7 out of 10, 5 days a week, that's fine. He felt, obviously, that he had ambitions to go further. And in a country like this, that's quite a jolt, because it's so competitive. And, you know, not that many jockeys win a hell of a lot of races. A bit like kind of a lot of... you know, the wealth in the world being in the hands of very small people, and racing is a bit like that. But he you know, he teamed up with Jessica Harrington. She's an incredible work ethic, and she has a lot of, she's access to some nice horses now. And to think that he's 12 rides this weekend, I mean, that's quite incredible, really. You know, another jockey with, you know, similar talent, Shane Foley, might have 2 or 3, and that's kind of the way the cards fall. But I've always been impressed by his attitude, and he would get flagged a bit because of his style, which I don't really think. I think it's almost irrelevant. He's very, very strong in a finish. His horses are usually in the right place, and he's just developed into a really good jockey now, who has you know, access to top class horses. And you know, some jockeys have really good jobs, but they don't ride in grade ones and group ones, and he certainly has the best of both worlds. And you know, he's hitting 12%, 13%, 14% over the last sort of few years since he teamed up with Jessica. And as he said, these are the weekends that matter, and he probably should ride a winner or two this weekend.
Yeah, these are the weekends that matter. It is Longines Champions weekend. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland, and it is time for us to talk about the Tote 10 to follow, which obviously hasn't changed much in the last few weeks. The important thing to note is I am still ahead of Johnny Ward, and that's all that matters. I'm just reading what it says here, Johnny. It's a big weekend for the Tote 10 to follow over Longines Irish Champions weekend. The World Pool at Leopardstown tomorrow is on. The leaderboard is Tom Malone kind of around the bend and streaking to glory. He's on 388. I'm on 283 and you're on 232. But all is not lost, because there are big double points on offer for this weekend. I'm delighted to say Jamie Benson from Tote.ie is with us again. Jamie, you're welcome back. How are you?
Yeah, grand, thanks. Thanks for having me back on.
Let's talk about Champions Weekend first and get your thoughts on that before I take another opportunity to slag off Johnny. Well, let's talk about the Champion Stakes, right? What's your instinct on how the Champion Stakes is going to go? The small but perfectly formed field.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a shame for the World Pool that there aren't more runners, because you get massive prices on some of the sort of outsiders to sneak a place. But frankly, it doesn't really matter, because this isn't so much one to punt as one to just admire. It's short of Misriff being there. It's as quality a field as you could hope for, really. And although there are only four, they're proper three at least. No offense to Patrick Sarsfield, but I mean, personally, I can't really look past St Mark's Basilica. That form with Misriff in the Eclipse just looks absolutely lightning, you know. And as much as Tarnawa is still a potential superstar, my 10 to follow will tell you that she hasn't beaten much. Because if I look at Alpine Star and the like, and the other fillies that have finished behind her, they finished behind a lot of other horses this season. So I think she's still got it to prove on form. So and St Mark's Basilica would be my idea of the winner.
You're bearing a grudge here from your 10 to follow in your pre-race analysis, I see.
I bear many grudges for many reasons, but in this case, yes.
Jamie, explain to us a little bit more about how the World Pool is actually going to work, and what difference it's going to make for punters. And it's not just the 4,000 at the track itself. It's actually anybody who's on Tote.ie can access this. How does this change the markets? What does it mean?
Absolutely. So basically what it means is we've got people from 20 different international jurisdictions betting into the same pool. So rather than it just being Ireland and England and a few others, it's now Hong Kong, Australia, many other international jurisdictions. And what it means is the pool is way bigger. And it means that also most of the money is from foreign punters. So they have a slightly more limited view of Irish racing than maybe you guys do. Well, maybe than Johnny does. Joe, I can't speak for you. But and the result is that they quite often misprice the horses. So they will massively overbet horses and jockeys in particular that are familiar to them. So notably Ryan Moore and the Coolmore horses get overbet. And what that means is that you can get a lot of value elsewhere on the other runners. And also you can back them in size if that's your deal. Although that said, don't be afraid to back the O'Brien horses with the tote, because also on tote.ie you get guaranteed SP as well. So if you are limited and struggling to get on elsewhere, you can get on the SP with us. But otherwise, look for those longer shots and slightly more obscure horses that will pay massive overs on the tote.
And that's where the value can be found.
Yeah. You just need to pick the winners.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Is there anything else, Jamie, from the weekend that is striking you in particular with the 10 to follow and where the opportunities might be for people?
Well, I mean, it's the Champions Stakes itself is a bonus race. And I know certainly I'm praying for St Mark's Basilica to try and pull me out of the mire somewhat. But really, for me, the main thing will be going through Saturday's card, particularly the two handicaps towards the end of the day, where basically we should be best price on near enough every horse. The way that the markets will shape up. So if you can try and find horses that also to bet into things like the trifecta market. So if you're picking the first three home there, you could get paid absolutely massive prices, so two or three times what the bookies would pay. So it's, again, if you find it hard enough to pick a winner, good luck picking the first three. But you will get well handsomely rewarded if you can. And especially, you know, I'd be looking at horses like Hookup for Willie Mullins as a real banker in your sort of trifecta perms and things like that.
Jamie, pardon my ignorance on this, but does the Whirlpool often get involved in racing in Ireland? Is this kind of the start of something new? Is it likely to happen regularly if it's a success? What's the future here?
Yeah, so this is actually the first one ever in Ireland, and it's really exciting. We've had a few in England. We had the first ones were initially at Royal Ascot for the Royal Meeting then, but we've had a few more this year, including at Goodwood and York and a few other places. And yeah, this is the first one in Ireland. And what we've seen from the UK is that the increased betting turnover and the diversity in prices has created really interesting betting markets. It also means more money going back into racing. So for every sort of 20 million, which is what we'd expect it to turn over, somewhere between 600,000 and 800,000 of that will go back directly to the race course. And so it's a big thing for sort of onshoring foreign betting turnover on your domestic racing. And it's, you know, we're still in the early days of it, but hopefully they will continue to grow, we'll expand it to more days, and it will just mean more money back to the grassroots of racing that needs it the most.
We were speculating a little bit about what this might mean for the makeup of fields in the future as well, that actually if this was to continue, then you would see more Japanese horses and you would see more Hong Kong horses coming over for the bigger pots as time goes on.
Absolutely. Hopefully that's the case. I mean, you can imagine, I mean, I think we spoke about it last time, didn't we, Johnny, that when Deep Impact ran in the arc, he went off at the tens on or whatever it was. And yeah, it's very much the case. And so we could get some of the superstar horses from Hong Kong and the like coming over here with Whirlpool. The turnover is massive, and then that means more money back to racing because of the way that the pool betting is structured. It's still early days, but hopefully that's what a sort of post-COVID world with stronger pools would look like, with more international runners and also with jockeys like Harry Bentley is riding in Hong Kong at the moment, and if he were to come back, that would be a big uptick in turnover. And it'd be good to see the Prince back as well. He's a top jock, and I feel he's a bit lost to the world out in Hong Kong. But hopefully also get Jean Marera, Zach Purton, people like that over as well, to just make our products, you know, the UK and Irish racing, which is already the best, even better.
Yeah, well, it's a good opportunity to benefit from globalization. So often this is one of those things that dilutes, and here's an opportunity for particularly Irish racing to catapult itself back onto the global stage. Pretty straightforward way. I've just realised that actually every week we've put up the screen grabs and there's a rank, and we've really only, been interested in where me versus Tom versus Johnny is going, but like the numbers beside it are huge. Tom is ranked 3,528. So, I mean, despite the fact he's killing us, he's not actually doing that well in the global scheme of things. Do you, off the top of your head, Jamie, happen to know where you're ranked?
Thank you for bringing that up. I'm not numerate enough to get down as far as I am. But I'm somewhere in the 5,000s. But it's awful because some of my friends look to me for views on racing, and then they see where I am in the 10 to follow, and they think it must be absolute guesswork. And sadly, they see right through me.
Well, that would be good enough for a podium place in our silver medal, as it would be. Ahead of this weekend, let's all stress that the time is not done. Johnny, I don't know if you have anything you want to say about this or if you've just been stunned into silence.
Yeah, well, Sir Mark Sicilica, he was one of my substitutes and he literally got injured as I was substituting. So I couldn't make yet another substitute, even on compassionate grounds. So here we go. I kind of do need him to win anyway. And could be a case of him being, you know, basically a bit of a certainty here because, like, as I pointed out earlier, there are negatives about the other two. If this horse is right, he should win. Simple as that. And, you know, you're still getting odds against about him.
Yeah, well, look, it's going to be a sensational weekend of racing on Saturday and Sunday. Jamie, you've done a great job of explaining it. I think it's a genuine innovation in the sports betting world and interesting to hear and see how it's going to go. So best of luck to everybody involved in that. And thanks a million for joining us today. Cheers.
Thanks so much, guys. Always a pleasure.
Johnny, I'm not sure why we ended up sending you down to interview Willie McCreary and Liam Sheedy. Did you spend the whole time taunting Willie McCreary about 1998?
We went into his little office and he had photos up from more so his claim days, actually. So photos of him lining out for claim. Claim seemed to wear the same jerseys as Kildare. But he was very interested in football because he's one of these, I would say, not an insignificant number of people who've sort of lost their grasp for the game to an extent because of the way it's been played compared to in the late 90s. So we weren't so much, I suppose, talking about Galway's win over Kildare. It was more so where football had become. But, you know, it still is a strange way of completely hooking the nation, I think. You know, the viewing figures for Mayo and Dublin were off the charts. And I still think, even though, you know, there'll be that element of tomorrow where it's like, Mayo against Tyrone will be a little bit defensive on the Tyrone side. A lot will be passing over and back. We'll actually be completely glued to it as well. And he was definitely gave me the impression that he was a bit old school in relation to that. But it was a great day. Liam G was great company as well. A lot of talk about hurling, a lot of talk about what he might do in the future and stuff like that. And it was during the heat wave. It was like the car had never looked more beautiful than it did that morning. And I don't know if that actually answers why I was there, but I was anyway.
Yeah, you were. And you were there to make a beautiful little film with Willie McCreary and former Tip hurling manager Liam Sheedy to talk about what it's like to train athletes, whether you're training horses or human beings. Have a look.
You're welcome along to the yard of Willie McCreary's up at the Curragh this morning. We're going to be joined not only by Willie, we're going to be joined by big racing fan Liam Sheedy, who has obviously just stepped down from the Tipperary job, having had such great success over the years with the Tipperary hurlers. We're going to talk about Longines Irish Champions weekend, Willie having had a winner at the first renewal with Faislan in 2014, the nexus between the two sports, and what racing can learn from hurling and vice versa. Liam, you actually know the Curragh from your training days, from your early Tip training days, and this is an early morning visit to the Curragh, but it's nowhere near as early as you brought the Tip lads one time, by all accounts.
No, yeah. Tony Bracken was working in the Curragh at the time, himself and Pat Herbert, so we brought the lads up on a Friday evening. They didn't know where they were coming, so we pulled them into the Curragh camp. And
blindfolded them, like.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were certainly caught a little bit off guard, but we had a fantastic 2 days. But I think it's all part of the preparation, I suppose. When you go into the Curragh, like Tony, it's fairly intensive. Mm. They had him up in the middle of the night. You know, a lot of the work they did, really, you know, you're trying to push them to their limits so that you know that, you know, they can go to extremes in terms of their preparation. But it was a big part of our starting point. If you ask me to know where that team in 2008 came from, I would say it came from the first visit we had to the Curragh. I still actually look back in the video that I have of it, and it's incredible footage 12 or 13 years on.
And Willie, you've a similar experience to Mick O'Dwyer era.
Yeah, so Mick trained us in the Curragh all his time. He loved the Curragh. We actually just trained 100 yards out that way. You probably can't see it in the fog, but that was our main training for the All-Ireland Final in 98. We ran the poles and we used to do runs around the Curragh. We'd start off the bottom of the Old Vic and go up around the Curragh. It was a 7-mile run and we did that every Sunday. We did a lot of pain out the Curragh.
A lot of pain.
And everyone says it's nice and level, but Mick found a hill. The Curragh is synonymous. Anyone around the world has heard of the Curragh Plains. You know, it's an outwash plain. It's a glacial outwash plain. It drains like nowhere else. And there the horses going out behind us and they're all happy. And they just, they love the Curragh because they can get all their work done here. We can go within 5 miles of here. We can have sand gallops, wood chip gallops, grass gallops like nowhere else in the world, you know. Mm. So great facilities for them all. They're all quite happy. And it's a good open space. Horses, you know, have 360 vision and big ears, and you know, nothing can come at them suddenly because of the big open expanse of the Curragh, and they love it, you know.
The first Longines Irish Champions weekend, it's 7 years ago now, and I think it was celebrated at the time. Billy Lee, very emotional coming into the winner's enclosure afterwards. I don't know if you were racing that day, Lee.
I wasn't, no.
Faisalana winning the Matron Stakes, Coolmore Matron Stakes, and it's so difficult for a Group 1 to come by you. Did you appreciate it at the time, and have you kind of, I suppose, appreciated it since?
Oh, God, look, at it. We were very lucky to get the mare, you know. Her previous run, she'd actually been third in the Morris de Geest, which is a Group 1 race, so... For a mare, she'd stepped up the ladder, and the ultimate was to get her to win a Group 1. Mm. And so Billy rode her with that aim in mind, just to give her every chance to win it, because we'd been placed, and it was like, just get over the line. And he did it. He gave her a super cool ride, just ice cold, just got up 100 yards from the line to win a half length, you know. Oh. Fantastic.
And you keep going back to try and win Group 1s, and you went back to Tip then after winning the All-Ireland, and it's, I don't know, the bug is just to do it again, I suppose.
Yeah, but look, you know, whether, you know, I think, you know, when you're involved in you know, a high-powered operation, it's great to be, you know, you're trying to get the best out of what you're working with. Mm. And look, you know, as I said, I was very fortunate to get a chance to work with some great players back between 2008-2010, stepped away and then got a chance to come back in again in 19, and I suppose, yeah, it is, like, it's like the bug, whether it's the racing bug or the hurling bug, like, you know, if you're, it's really good adrenaline from it. It's a fantastic place to be in, like, when you see players performing to their potential, and obviously if you get up to the steps of the Hogan Stand, like, it's, you know, that's our Longines weekend, like, that's what we drive for, and it's fantastic when it goes well.
I couldn't help but think of a parallel between Limerick Hurlers and Aidan O'Brien this morning, that if you're, like, if you're the new Tipperary manager, or you're managing Cork or managing Galway, we have to match their standards here. And when you look at Limerick, who might be the best hurling team of all time, you might be dealing with the best trainer of all time. And to win top races, what do you do?
You compete. You have to compete, and that's what you're trying to aim for. It's very simple. They're the target you have. Mm. So it's actually easier. Mm. Because if they're all if you play with bad players, you get bad. You know, you get worse at your whatever game you are. Yeah. You're trying to get your athletes to get up to that standard. Mm. And if you can get 8 of them up and 10 of them up and 12 of them up, then you have a chance. You know, we're racehorses here and we're trying to do the same. I'm trying to get my team up to his standard. And if you have one or two up to his standard, you're doing very well. If you can build on that every year, you know, you're doing very well. And that's what every trainer in Ireland is trying to do, is get to his standards, you know.
Insinuendo then, who obviously did her on the line the last day, she could go off the Maeglair Jules Blandford Stakes, which would obviously bring her back to the Curragh.
Yeah, on Champions Weekend, that's what we're thinking anyway. With a view to going out far and again at the end of the year as well, but that'll be her target now on Champions Weekend.
And what, like, if you were more confident of having a winner at Longines Irish Champions Weekend or getting Liam Sheedy to take a leg in a horse this morning, how would you weigh it up?
Oh, I'd be more confident getting a winner at Champions Weekend. I heard he's that tight. He found the plaster, he cut himself.
In the day when you used to train teams to win All-Irelands before Limerick came along, there's definitely a science to peaking. You can't peak in April if you're hurling. And there's probably parallels with racing as well, I think, in that regard.
Well, definitely as a player, like, you have to have hunger and appetite going out onto the pitch. And, you know, if you overcook it, it's not going to win well. I remember actually in 19, before the Munster final, I was reffing the match. And next thing I heard one of the boys say, slow down the puck out. And, you know, I says, we could be in a bit of bother here, because the Munster Championship was four matches in a row, and then you were straight into a Munster final. Mm. So it was really intensive 5 or 6 week period. So, you know, you have to have the hunger and the appetite, because if you're overcooked, you know, you need a full tank going out onto the pitch, and freshness is a key requirement, I guess.
And that, like, it's kind of similar maybe in hurling. If you want to, you might want to win a, or sorry, in race, you might want to win a Munster Championship, but ultimately you want to win All-Ireland. So, like, I guess you're trying to get your horses to peak around this time of year for a weekend like the Longines Irish
Championship. Of course, yeah. Like I mean, with the prize money, the prestige of the Longines weekend, it's unbelievable. And that is all Ireland, you know what I mean, for the flat horses, definitely. And you have to try and peak for that. And I mean, you know, going back to Liam there in Kildare, I think we peaked for all Ireland semi-final. And I learned a lot from that.
Well, more that she met Galway in the final, that she couldn't...
Johnny, you mightn't get off this farm. Right? So, no, but I think we did peak.
Genuinely, yeah.
Yeah, I think we genuinely peaked it because we were playing Kerry in the semi-final. I think Mikko thought Kerry were the team to beat, and we peaked for that. And then we tried to get fitter than 100%, and I don't think you can get fitter than 100%. I think you can tweak things to stay at 100%, but I don't think you can get actually fitter. And a few lads got injuries, and... You know, I think that was our downfall more so than Gaul. I think Gaul were lucky.
Honestly, you know, some of the worst performances we've had has been where we might have just pushed it a little bit too far. So there's you know, you really got to know that, you know, you got to be hitting the mileage. And actually, with all the technology you have now from a hurling perspective, like you can see it in the numbers. You know what I mean? Mm. So we know the numbers that we'd expect to hit quarter on quarter. And you can just see the complete trail if you've overcooked it. So, like, you know, it's a learning, I think, maybe in... There has been times where, but as you said, it's all about the All Ireland final. Really spot on, you know. And like we're trying to get, I suppose, anywhere to get an inch. And like the big thing for us, and I'd love to hear what it's like for racing, but the big thing for us is going into, you know, you might be training to an empty stadium, but getting upped into an 80,000 stadium on All Ireland final day. And I actually taped the Kerry and Dublin football match. I got somebody in to tape the game. And then when I come back to Turles, all the houses outside were saying, geez, there's a massive crowd in Turles tonight. But I actually had the sound in for the Dublin and Kerry match, and for 15 minutes they can't hear themselves, but it's actually to prepare them for what comes in Croke Park. So because I suppose when horses are training here and they're on the gallops this morning, they're on their own, generally it's a bit different when you get to racing weekend. Well,
you're spot on, because in the last year and a half with COVID, there's been nobody racing. So the two-year-olds, for example, first time out, are going to an empty parade ring, and there's no noise, and it's lovely and quiet, and you know, they're basically like they're at home. Whereas Longines weekend or any weekends before that was busy people talking, yapping, kids running around the place, and horses get spooked.
Yeah.
So you have to try and prepare them for that as well. And we often take them away to a race meet, but we wouldn't have obviously the crowds. But you know, once the speakers go on, sometimes horses go mad, and they'd be playing music in between races. And
yeah,
you know, you'd often ask trainers ask to turn the music down around the parade ring. Yeah, so it's exactly the same.
So there's one obvious parallel between the two sports, well, at the moment, in terms of trying to marry data and like just your eye for things, and that. I guess every player now, you more or less know from your stats how much that player has run. And it's something in racing, Willie, that it hasn't necessarily totally taken off in terms of GPS when they're in their training and their weight and all that. Like, do you think it's something that will become a bigger deal? Or?
Well, we weigh them. We weigh them every week, keep a good eye on their weight, you know, and we weigh them after, prior and post-racing just to see what they've lost, you know. It's all very interesting.
Well, say in the morning when they're working now, do you have data on the speed they're going, or is that more like intuition?
It's more intuition, and the lads know, and you know, we're doing the same thing every day, so it's you know, it's
the jockey's feel or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and I would love now personally to have the clocks in every race. I think it's great for young fellas to learn how to ride races too, and to see the speed they're doing mid-race. Do you know what I mean? I think in England it's done, and I think, you know, we should be able to step up to that mark now.
As well as that, these are individuals. Like, they're not...
Yeah.
Sport would be boring if it was artificial intelligence. These are machines, like, so...
Yeah.
You'd have to deal with hurlers different ways. You know, what motivates one over the other?
Yeah. I think I was caught in a piece of footage there. So I was putting the arm around one lad, but I was giving the other fella a little bit of a thump in the chest. Because, as you said, some players react differently. Mm. And you're trying to get the best out of, you know, and if that's the arm around the shoulders, what's required, that's what you do. And if a fella needs a little bit of a call out to say, come on, there's much more there. So, but, you know, look, these players are just mad to play at the top of their game. And, you know, when they're there, it's a great place to live and operate, you know.
Are you, can you relate to that?
Oh, definitely.
Some horses just
of course, yeah.
Need motivation.
Yeah, and they need to be coaxed, and, you know, and they need to be encouraged, you know what I mean? Like most horses don't know all horses don't know where the winning line is, you know, and a jockey's asking them to go faster. Like, you're asking a horse to go into the pain barrier, which is past where your players are going.
Yeah.
I mean, Aidan O'Brien was quoted, his horse, the great horse who won 6 Group 1s for him, but he went into the red zone more than any other horse he's ever had. You know, which is the red zone, which is the pain barrier. And that's what you're asking a horse to do every time he races. But you also have to have him that fit that he can go into that pain barrier without a string not breaking or something, you know, that he's able to do that physically. Do you know what I mean? Mentally, some of them won't ever go into it. And they'll win a race off 80% because they just won't go to that other level. But the top horses do go to that level more often.
That is the thing, isn't it? Because, like, ability, and I think all young players should know this, ability gets you so far. And, like, a lot of even soccer players went to England who didn't necessarily have the ability, but they made it because they really put in the effort, training, and also mentality.
Yeah, I think the mind probably gives up way quicker than the body. And, you know, if you get people that are strong-minded, and as Willie said, we'll just keep going and going and going, like, you know, we found ourselves a man down in 19 against Wexford, 14 men, you know, in a game that where the ball moves extremely quickly. We were 5, 6, 7 points down and managed to turn it around and get a victory. So, like, you know, that is there. And I think sometimes it comes from the strangest of corners at the strangest of times. And obviously, like, and then you get momentum. And obviously in our sport, momentum is everything. And once you have a bit of momentum, then everything starts to flow. But I think having that strong mind is really important. As you know, we have to get them into the red zone. As a player, you have to be in the red zone if you're going to be competitive.
You've obviously, you've stepped down from the Tipperary job this time, but like the urge for returning to the top level of your sport, it probably never really leaves you, does it?
No. Look, it's like a bug. It's whatever really, like the adrenaline flow you get and the enjoyment you get from being around top class players and really good players that want to just operate to the top of the level is a really exciting place to be. But it's very, very time consuming, but hugely enjoyable. I wouldn't take a minute back in the 3 years, you know, every aspect for, you know, the preparation and the training camps and just getting teams ready to go and play big matches. And look, some days it rolls with you. You got to roll with the punches as well. Some days it doesn't work out. But overall, it's a hugely enjoyable experience.
What was the comparison owning a winner with Dennis Hogan compared to winning a big hurling game?
Yeah, look,
slightly different.
It is, yeah. But I mean, isn't it like it's probably a bit of adrenaline. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a great buzz. Look, as I said, you know, I think sport plays a big part of my life, and it's a great part of Irish life in my view. You know, there's a lot that we can be proud of here as part of our heritage, and I think, you know, horse racing and GA are two very, very big things that go really well and are a big part of our identity here in Ireland. So as I said, I love a day at the races, but I suppose best of all is a day in the sideline. There's nothing beats a day in the sideline, 80,000 people in Croke Park and everything going your way.
And I think what strikes me of a morning like this is obviously it's a beautiful, beautiful setting at the Curragh. It's a national treasure, really, the place itself. But it's, for me, it's the bond between the work rider and the horse that you see going into the stable, and they know each other like they're best friends almost.
Yeah, I couldn't get over it. I mean, obviously we've seen him walk around inside first, and then him went up with Willie up to the gallops. But even to see the way Willie had the interaction with the jockeys coming off, and they're having their words and saying, "Yeah, really good workout this morning." So, as you said, it's you know, when you're into sport, I could stand on the gallops there all morning, because you know it's a great place to be if you're into the sport. And as I said, I think we're very fortunate at the moment. We've got some top class trainers, we've got top class jockeys. You know, look at what Rachel Blackmore is achieving. I mean, like the consumption that we get from having people like Rachel Blackmore and Barry Geraghty and Ruby and all the others before
it's
her.
Amazing.
It is really amazing. It is. So I think it's in a really good place.
And the hardest job as a trainer is to convince an owner to get involved in a horse, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, look, at some of them just, some of these lads from down the country just be looking for vouchers off. You know what I mean?
The story continues, isn't it?
The story continues, yeah, for sure.
Night racing
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.